Well, I have never really regretted my birth name before, but I've heard plenty, too many Sandys lately. And so it's sort of like being born on the 4th of July. You just accept it. You had nothing to do with it. And so you just go right on. So that's what I'm going to do here today. And I know our hearts are with all the people in New York and Washington and up the coast. And especially after seeing these pictures today, it's really dramatic. You realize what flooding does and wind, what that causes. So I'm wondering, I'm just curious how many people think that this topic of methylmercury is a disaster topic. Think so? Does it seem like maybe they put me in the wrong place? Does it? Okay, I'm ready to convince you that actually this is a type of disaster, and I've worked on these disasters with the Red Cross where they really are very, you don't miss them. You can see them, you can smell them, you can hear them. And so this is more of a silent, a slow motion disaster, man-made, technological. All of those words work with any kind of exposure that is quietly settling and exposing the most vulnerable. And so this project, I want to acknowledge my community partners. They were so important in this community, and especially Tamina Kinsey, which I hope she could come to San Francisco with me, but she was not able to get away. She's the Indian Health Service public health nurse that I work with a lot. And Deborah and Jade were our research assistants. Mike Todd, community organizer with the Fort Peck tribes. And Sandra White Eagle from the office, Tribal Office of Environmental Protection, as are Lori and Deb. Oh, I want to be sure and acknowledge the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Nurse Faculty Scholars Program, and I'm going to tell you more about that at the end. I have nothing to disclose. So this study was, the purpose was to actually look at fish consumption and fish advisory awareness, actual exposure, and risk communication preferences. And this particular group was, and this is a, they actually put up the teepees to show the kids, the tribal kids in the community, how to do this. So the elders came out and they had a great day, and I was there and I took a picture. I just thought that was a beautiful picture. So I was invited into this community to actually conduct this study by the Tribal Office of Environmental Protection. There was a, we did a study on another reservation in Montana, and we were looking at the possible exposure, but it was just a small study, and we were actually asking fish consumption questions primarily. And that was based on a study done by Hightower in 2006 that was published, and it was she looked at the 1999 to 2001 NHANES data and found that American Indian women were three times more likely, based on the random sample that NHANES does, to be exposed to methylmercury, and that concerned us. And especially after the National Resource Council put out the recommendations that individual people ought to be looked at for exposure if there was a possibility of exposure. So there, you can see we have a common theme here. It's almost impossible to talk about disasters without giving you some geography. And so I want to take you to, first of all, I'll take you to Yellowstone National Park down here. Maybe some of you have been to Yellowstone. And there's Glacier up there. I'm sorry if it's so blurry. But here are the headwaters of the Missouri River right there near Bozeman. Where the Missouri River starts, it goes, flows north up toward Rocky Boy Reservation. And then this is actually Fort Peck Reservoir. And this is an enormous, there's a dam, Fort Peck Dam there, and then the Missouri River, it backs up the Missouri River, and then the whole southern border of Fort Peck Reservation is the Missouri River. On this side, this is our other site that we work at. This is the Flathead Lake, and for this ecosystem, the Flathead River starts up above Glacier Park in actually Canada, and it flows down through the reservation and then out through the Columbia River and to the Pacific. And so these are huge waterways. The Flathead Lake is the largest freshwater lake west of the Mississippi. And there's a lot of really good fish in these. So I'm just put this up here because a lot of people ask me about this, and I'm sure you all know that the primary source of methylmercury is from coal-fired power plants, an anthropometric source. And that doesn't necessarily have to be in Montana to affect our rivers and streams. It can be in China because the airwaves take the organic, inorganic mercury and then deposit it into lakes and streams. And then through the methylation process here, it works its way up through the food chain. And so if you eat the predator fish, which are just delicious, by the way, lake trout, swordfish, walleye, and they're, the larger the fish, the more mercury they contain. This is a picture that this company produced. I just love pictures, and this one shows the bioaccumulation of mercury in fish. And this is a big fish, and it was caught by Dave on the Flathead Lake. That's a lake trout, and he's in a fishing contest. And one of the reasons that we started our project in the first place was because we were asking women in the WIC clinics about food their fish consumption, and someone mentioned, oh, I get this nice fish out of the food bank. And so we discovered that there are tons of fish, tons, literally tons, pulled out by the fishermen. The tribe had a fishing contest to try to rid this predator trout that was eating all the native trout, the bull trout. And so they were, instead of just throwing them away, they were putting them in the food bank. It was going all over the state. And so as soon as the tribe realized that, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, they started measuring fish before they put them in the food chain. And that was an outcome of our small project. So in terms of, this was one of our concerns, of course, and during that pilot study, our discovery of the food bank, we wanted to know what are the sources for women, are they eating fish, and really no one could tell us. And especially at Fort Peck, they didn't really know, and that's why the Tribal Office of Environmental Protection didn't think that this would be a worthwhile study. Our other concern is that the advisory messages might not reach the people because tribal members fish on home reservations without a license or need for a license, and so they don't get the brochure that has the messaging in it. So like lead, methylmercury is preventable, a preventable neurotoxin, and it affects the developing brain of a fetus, infant, or child. And so understanding the exposure pathway and the possibility of reducing exposure is very important. So this is our first aim, was to establish our community-based participatory research group, our academic community partnership. And these are the elders, some of the elders that we met with. This is a wonderful group of very bright women. I have enjoyed them so much, getting to know them. And Mike Todd is in the back, the only gentleman, the young man that brought all these women together originally and meets with them regularly. He's the community organizer. They had a lot of wisdom and had recollection of what fishing was like in this community in the past. We also depended on Indian Health Service professional group to advise us throughout the project. And this still goes, this is very important. This project, you know, me and whatever I do is insignificant compared to what the ideas that the community will bring forward based on what we find and how they can rearrange what we might do to find it. So this is a very important component of CBPR. This is Jade Failing, and she was our first research assistant. So we intended to go in and use a survey and collect a hair sample to find out if people were actually exposed. And we started in the WIC clinics, and we were just having a terrible time with recruitment. It was so slow, so few women coming in. And so we actually went back to our community partners and said, you know, we hate to be in a hurry. It's not good to be a researcher in a hurry in a tribal community. It's probably not a good idea. But they really did understand that NIH and private foundations, you have a timeline, and so you have to get things done. And so they were very helpful in redirecting us and helping us go to the tribal college and talk to women in the age group that we were looking for. So this is a cross-sectional descriptive study. We did actually end up recruiting 200 participants, and that's pretty good for a community of about 5,000 people in this community. We used this online survey that was adapted based on input from the tribe, 52 item. It was really very long. It had a section for fish consumption, one on risk awareness and community preferences, and we ended up having the research assistant actually read the survey because of the difference in education levels and reading abilities, and that was another recommendation that we received from the tribe. The hair was collected based on the NHANES protocol, and a direct mercury analyzer was used to evaluate the hair sample using the EPA method 7473. So this is Sandra White Eagle. She's at an Earth Day event explaining water and what happens with water. She was a wonderful partner. As far as our results, our demographics, we used a categorical variable for age. We put the in categories of 18 to 26, and we had three categories for age. And we found a significant association between age and marital status, and having a Facebook page, so that probably doesn't surprise you. And we also, there were about 46% that were single, 33% were members of an unmarried couple, and 12% were married. 45% had less than a high school education in this population, and 76% had an income less than $20,000 a year, 65% were unemployed. And that's actually not too bad of an unemployment rate, because the actual unemployment rate on this reservation is 80%. 97% were American Indian, and 60% had Facebook pages, and 85% texted. Now, we happen to add that information. It was very helpful as we go forward. We may want to know that, and we didn't know, so that was helpful. And this is Katie McDonald at the Mercury Analyzer with her little mercury boats, where she puts the hair, and it's a very interesting process. I learned a lot in this, working with the toxicologist at Salish Kootenai College. He would take me through his lab, we'd bring our samples, and I could have spent hours there, because it was just a whole new world for me. When I met him, he said, "I don't know if I want to do this project. I don't do people." And I said, "Oh good, I do." And so we were a great team. He was in his lab knowing so much that I didn't know. And so that was a fantastic thing. Now, here are our results. We actually had, and this is good news, we had actually no one that was in the actionable range of one part per million or one microgram per gram. We have, our range is less than, and that's actually an error. It's supposed to be 0.005 to zero, the highest was 0.43 out of this 200. So no one we didn't have to do a home visit on anyone to ask about further questions. The same is true on the Flathead Reservation. We also did a project there, and we have found no one that was actually exposed. But this is what we did find. As far as fish consumption, among the participants, over half, or 59%, reported they ate just one fish meal per month. 34% reported 2 to 4 fish meals, and 7% said they ate 5 to 8 meals per month. Approximately 1/3 of the sample reported that their family consumes locally caught fish, with 41% indicating they were unaware of the size or species of the fish. And this is a common problem. I've mentioned it. When you get a portion, or you buy a portion, or your relative gives you a portion, sometimes you don't know what size it was. They all say, "Oh, it's this big, and you got this part." But they didn't really know, and I think that would be true for myself, too. If someone gave me some nice fish to eat, I wouldn't actually know where it came from, or probably wouldn't even know what type it was. They also talked about where the fish came from, that they knew they were primarily fishing in the Poplar River or in the Missouri River. And a fish advisory of the group, 78% were unaware of any state or tribal advisories of fish consumption, and this goes along with what we learned before. Most of the women, 83%, rated their knowledge of mercury contamination of fish as very little or none. On the other hand, and this is very important, and part of our results that I think we're going to need to take action on, 72% were also unaware of healthy fish intake guidelines. For childbearing age women, you're supposed to eat 6 to 12 ounces per week to really gain the omega-3 fatty acids that you need. So our results show that this population is really not eating fish, eating other things but not fish. So one of our, I accidentally put this in here. This is the results from I happened to put the flathead results in the fork pack, so sorry about that. So one of our concerns, we did some regression modeling, but we're really still looking at that data. Because of how we are looking at the demographics, and in when you do modeling, as you know, you need to really be very careful about where that's coming from. So we're going back through right now, so I don't really have that to share with you. What I will tell you is that these messages that are out there right now are very complex. I had to really get up close and put my glasses on straight and really study this. And that is the fish message, and that's only about a tenth of it. It's a huge brochure, and it's very hard to understand. And I think that our messaging is one of our great enemies here. It's good that we have messages, but we need to be more effective, especially with the populations who we're attempting to serve. There are great risk communication models. This is just one. I think that there are some really good ideas in here, but as I go back to the community, and I'll be going back before probably in November, we're going to look at this because I think that this is a very linear model. And I think that the elders will tell me that we need to make this more circular, and we don't say compliance, non-compliance. There's a reason for everything. We have to understand the motivation there. And so this is a good start, but we're going to develop our own model so we understand culturally what is going to be most effective. So in conclusion, I think we've recognized the need for this balance, benefits, harms message, tailored to the population. This is one delivery method. The fish is good. The fish is good. The fish is not bad. The fish is an unfortunate recipient of mercury, but the fish is not bad. So we need to make sure that we don't give the wrong message. And I think even in doing this project, I'm concerned that maybe because we were asking questions, the fish became the enemy. So we need to go back and make sure that we tailor it and we balance that message. And we need better communication tools, not only for this environmental toxin, but for others. And we also need to consider the electronic message fits the demographic. And I think that's why understanding who is texting, and that was really one of the things that the public health nurse says, is if all I had to do is find my prenatals through Facebook, I have it made, because there people are on Facebook. The other thing I think that we really want to do is go back and ask if we should pursue this. I'm a researcher, so I think we should. I think we need to do an intervention, but they may not think that. They may think, there are other more important issues. And I can tell you that they will tell me that. And that's what we need to do. And if I can't do it, I need to find someone to help. And that's the idea of CBPR. So I wanted to just put a plug in for the Robert Wood Johnson Nurse Faculty Scholars Program. I'm very grateful to them. They funded this project. These are career development awards, and you have to be a new PhD. You can be a late bloomer. You can have gray hair. If you're young, it's better. But you know, we're all important. They love diversity. Diversity is very important to this group. They want all kinds of people. In our cohort, there were 15, and it was the most marvelous experience that I can even begin to describe, the whole mentoring, leadership training, the salary support for research, buyout for 60%. Do go and look at this website and consider it. I am a person that said, oh, they'd never pick me. But they did. So, thank you.